Thank you. I think perhaps the sports person of the moment is Kevin Sinfield. Here he is, coming up on the screen, a rugby league legend, bringing back some hope perhaps to the rugby union English side as the new defence coach, but also, of course, decorated with awards now, a fundraising hero to the MND community, a rock-solid mate to Rob Burrows. Just an all-round great guy. How can you not love him? We could all do with a mate like Kevin Sinfield. Well, you'll know, I'm sure, that Sinfield recently did a big charity challenge, another one, for MND. It was 7 ultramarathons in 7 days. Some of you maybe aren't that far off that kind of epic fitness madness. I know I am. And I would imagine probably the majority of us can only imagine how hard that must have been. 280 miles, I can do the maths. The pain, the struggle, the mental challenge. Well, when he entered the Old Trafford Stadium on completing his run, standing ovation, the BBC reporter says to him, "Ah, oh, 7 ultra marathons. Another massive hard challenge. Kevin, what keeps you going?" His answer, moving, inspiring, it was love for a mate, friendship, Rob Burrows, the whole family, their courage. And of course, a desire, a hope that there would be a cure found for MND, the horrible disease of MND. It was very inspiring. And similar questions, you see, I think, can be asked of the Christian life. What keeps you going? And what keeps you going when the going gets tough? I don't know what kind of year you've had, or how perhaps your faith is coping in the light of tough stuff right now. In our church family in London this year, we've seen the death of a child, the death of parents, suicide attempts, depression, anxiety, eating disorders, miscarriage, cancer, job loss, homelessness, debt, marriage breakdown, abuse, persecution, people being slandered, treated badly or unfairly because they are a Christian. And I feel very aware tonight, as we talk about tough things, that some of you will be facing trials like these right now. Perhaps in your sport, injury, disappointment. Maybe you've been battered for being a Christian in your sports club this past term. Or in life, feeling let down in a relationship. Maybe there's illness, even death of a loved one close to you. We're not sure of reasons to believe that the world is broken. It's all over the news, social media. It's a tough world. And sometimes it's even more tough, actually, for being a Christian in it. Well, in his letter to the Romans, Paul doesn't hide away from this reality either. In Romans 3:23, he says, "We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Our bodies, our world is not what it ought to be. The consequences of human sin are brutal in this earth. The whole of creation is fractured." And it was there in our reading tonight. Did you notice? In 20 and 21, creation has been subjected to frustration. It is in bondage to decay. But Romans is a letter written that people like you and I, might keep going unashamedly, trusting God, trusting in his goodness, even in the face of pain and suffering. That's my prayer tonight, our prayer, that in our homes, in our sports clubs, we would keep going unashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone. And I tell you, when people do keep going like this in the spiritual ultra marathon, it is the most incredible and powerful witness to everyone watching on. 5 years ago, my husband Kev and I, we had a dear friend, Basil, at church, battling with cancer. There were days of despair, definitely. He properly suffered. He had so much life left to live.
But on the day it was becoming clear how serious his condition was, he said to my husband, just simply, not worth comparing. Not worth comparing. It actually became a sort of motto for Baz, not worth comparing. He was quoting from that first verse tonight, Romans 8, verse 18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Some motto, hey, when you're just 39. It's not saying, oh, the sufferings of this present time are nothing. No, it was horrible for Basil, the way his body gradually failed. It's not saying pretend the pain isn't real, like some religion does. Cancer is so sad. It was a tragedy to lose someone so young. And it's not saying, be strong, don't cry. Jesus wept at the grave of his friend as we wept at the grave of ours. But this verse, it is saying, compare and contrast. Put these things in the weighing scales. Suffering feels heavy, intense. Get that? But there's something more intense, longer lasting, more real, the weight of the glory that our friend Basil believed would surely follow for those who hope in Jesus. The game-changing truth in Basil's suffering, hope. It's game-changing. The hope of heaven, the hope of a glory to be revealed. No despair, only hope. Coming to prepare this talk reminded me of an illustration I heard a few years ago now. So imagine this cable here is a timeline of yours and my existence, okay? You existing forever. There it is. And then you see this little bit here? Imagine this represents your time here on Earth. You're born, you die. You live just a few short years here on Earth. Doesn't feel like that. In fact, when there's suffering, it feels really intense and heavy. But this, all of this, is your existence. And yet we spend so much time, don't we, thinking about this, worrying about this, anxious for this, wanting good health, security, wondering, you know, what should I do after uni? Should I travel? And maybe I need to make up for all that time that I lost in COVID. And will I get a good job? And I wonder if I'll get married. And I hope my friend's okay, and I hope my parents don't die young. I don't know what it might be, but we spend so much time in this. And it's not all bad. It's not all bad to do that. Please don't hear that. But we can so easily, I do, lose sight of all of this, right? A whole eternity ahead of us. Basil was just 39 when he died. It was tragic. He had... Even in this, he did have so much more life to live. Yeah, things that he never got to do or see or experience. But as he suffered, he led our whole church family, not in despair, but in the glorious, unashamed gospel hope that he had in Jesus. He knew, actually, that to die for him was better by far. Not worth comparing to his present sufferings. Of course, you won't begin to agree with Basil or Paul's analysis if your picture of the afterlife is the traditional floaty future, sitting on a cloud, playing a harp. That's not worth trading in your current life for. But that is not the future that Paul paints in Romans 8. Look with me if you've got your Bible open, but it's also going to be coming on the screen. See the language of this reading. Verse 21, the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. Creation itself will be set free. Just think for a moment of all that is beautiful and staggering in creation. For us now, the greatness of oceans, mountains, valleys, forests, sport. I love skiing, and when you get to the top of a mountain on a clear day, blue sky, and then you ski down in perfect powder, you feel alive. Like, can life get any better than this? It can. It will. And you'll have your own amazing moments in sport. The hole-in-one, the PB, being part of an unexpected win, watching the best goals or the fastest run. If you go, oh, that's amazing. Well, one day, all of creation, all of sport will be liberated, will be set free to really be something. It's almost as though this world, what it has to offer now is in kind of 2D, black and white, just fuzzy. Just imagine what the world will be like when it's actually set free to really be itself, incorruptibly new. And we've had a very Narnia-filled house this Christmas. Did you know that the Narnia children's books are in many ways a picture of the Christian gospel? So the old Narnia represents our lives now. The new Narnia, the one to come. C.S. Lewis, the author, in the final book of the saga, picturing God's new creation, the glory that is to be revealed, says this. The new Narnia was a deeper country. Every rock and flower and blade of grass looked as if it meant more. I can't describe it any better than that. If ever you get there, you will know what I mean. One of the characters is described summing up what everyone was feeling in the new Narnia. I have come home at last. This is my real country. This is the land I've been looking for all my life, though I never knew it till now. The reason why we love the old Narnia is that it sometimes looked a little like this. And it's not just creation. See verse 23. We ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groaning inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. We ourselves will be liberated, will be free. Our bodies will be brought back from the sort of rotting, sinful, physical, decaying state of this life and be made new in everlasting physical life, in new bodies with no aches and pains, which I am certain this week I am feeling a lot more than any of you. But also, bodies set free morally, never to fail, always to love, always like Jesus, free from sin and selfishness, none of those hurting, broken, complicated relationships, free from fears, anxieties, worries, free from the constant comparisons, the chasing and searching for fulfillment and satisfaction. We will be free to be fully as we were meant to be, glorified children of God. But for now, Romans 8 makes it clear. We have to wait. We have to wait patiently. Look at verse 24 to 25, how Paul continues. For in this hope we were saved, but hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. Our hope is something not yet seen, something we do not yet have. I have been present at 4 childbirths, 3 of my own and 1 as a birth partner. I actually once heard a young guy being asked how he imagined childbirth to feel, and he said, is it a little bit like standing on a upside down plug? No is the simple answer to that, and he'll learn, no doubt. The pains of childbirth are extreme. You feel as though you are going to die, like you cannot keep going. You scream, you cry, you hit, you punch, you bite anything given to you, and you groan. I mean, like, you really groan, longing for it to be over. At least there's a little window into my experience for you. But this is the image that Paul gives us here to help us keep going. Patiently waiting for a hope not yet seen, but that will come. Verse 22, the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth. We groan inwardly as we wait. I think the normal reaction for a birth partner is to feel, I know there's a few in here actually, at the back, to feel a little bit traumatised in the labour ward. My husband seems to have found each of our experiences fascinating, animalistic in his words, but he was an amazing support to me. A little bit longer, babe. You're doing great. Just keep going. It will end. You know, midst sort of lighting little, you know, battery-powered candles and trying to make it all better. That was basically, though, his sweet refrain at each of our births, despite me, apparently, I can't remember, but telling him that his breath stunk and that there was nothing he could say that would make any of it better. So clearly, I have no filter when giving birth. But he was actually right. The suffering, the groaning, the unbearable pain, it did end. And each time, you know, forgive the crudeness perhaps, but a head did emerge, a hand, and then just the biggest liberating, freeing, overwhelming feeling of joy as the child who we'd been waiting for, who we'd not yet seen, not yet held, who we'd been eagerly expecting, was there in our arms. Guys, this is the Christian life, a labour ward. You know, actually at times, as I did in giving birth, you know, we will feel despair at the struggle. That's okay. And of course, there will be other times when life feels great, good times. For some of you right now, it might actually mostly feel like that. I mean, you're young, fit, playing loads of sport. You're at uni, you've got loads going for you. And hey, that's great, you know, thank God for that. But harder times will come. And will you keep going? Not in despair, but in hope. Some people say Romans 8 is the Mount Everest of the Bible. Pastorally more rich than anywhere else. It is epic. It is full of game changers. Please take time after this conference to stay in this glorious chapter. And there is so much more we could say, but there are just two great things from that passage read that I'd like to touch on. In the tough times, in the struggle with sin, in the face of suffering, verse 26, God promises by his Spirit to help us, interceding for us. The Spirit of God lives in us, keeping us going. And then verse 28, God promises that in all things, he works for the good of those who love him, even in suffering. Actually, often in suffering and struggle, that's the way of the cross. He worked through the suffering of Christ to bring glory. And when we suffer, when we feel weak and exhausted, the good that, in my experience, God often does is that he forces us to sharpen our focus, to zoom in on what really matters. You know, watching our friend Basil suffer, but suffer with Jesus, trusting in the hope of Jesus, it was an amazing thing to see. And it made my husband and I actually love the gospel even more. And perhaps there's someone or more than one person coming to mind for you tonight for whom you've also seen that extraordinary, just step by step, trusting in the hope of God, even in the darkest of days, even in the valley of the shadow of death, clinging to a hope that they believe, actually more than ever, that they believe will surely follow for them beyond the grave. Will you, will I keep going like this? Will we stand unashamed in the hope of the gospel? Kevin Sinfield, started with him, my sportsman of the year, the moment. He kept going in his epic physical fundraising challenges by a hope of a future where there is a cure for MND. When someone as fit and healthy and as young as Rob Burrows doesn't waste away before the eyes of those who love him most. And I pray there will be. I really pray there will be. But the way disease and illness and all of creation will ultimately be saved from its bondage to decay is not by our efforts. It is through Christ alone. The real hope for Rob Burrows, for Kevin Sinfield, for our friend Basil, for you and I, is found in the true events of Jesus, in the death and resurrection of Jesus, who suffered in our place, who took our guilt upon himself, curing us of the most actually deadly of diseases, sin, and then rising to physical life again. So we know that it is true. It's true. There is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. No despair, only hope. Hope of eternal life beyond the grave, incorruptible, free, liberated, physical, glorious. This is a hope worth investing your life in, your future, your money, your time. Remember this timeline? Won't you live this life in light of eternity? In this life, will you fix your eyes on the future, physical, real glory that will be revealed? And will you engage in the mission that is taking this hope to a world that so desperately needs it? Live your life in light of eternity. Fix your eyes on the future glory to be revealed and engage in the mission, because this is a hope that our friends, that our sports clubs, our families need so desperately to hear. Let's just take a minute quietly to pray, to reflect, and then we'll stand to sing.